the recap process deals with those minor policy changes and the more technical things. This particular package of code amendments, a large section of it deals with looking at the land division regulations 5 years after we passed the new regulations in 2002. And in the spring of 2007, we gave a report to the Planning Commission outlining issues that had arisen in the first 5 years of implementing that code. And a big part of this package is carrying forward some of the recommendations from that report. We did a little bit more outreach than we would normally do with a regulatory improvement process because of the number of issues on this package. In addition to working with our regulatory improvement stakeholder advisory group, we also met specifically with a number of interest groups that are interested in code items on the package. We had two open houses, one downtown and one on the east side. We expanded our mailing lists to let people know when the hearings and open houses would be. For example, we added to our mailing list a whole group of regular customers of BDS that go through the subdivision process so that they are aware of the changes here. And then, of course, we had Planning Commission hearings as well. At this point, I'm going to turn it over to Phil Nameny, who's going to go over more of the specifics of what's in this package.
Thanks, Eric. Phil Nameny with the Bureau of Planning. After researching items for Recap 4, we came up through with amendments addressing 46 issues, and those are the 46 issues that the Planning Commission forwarded their recommendation. Of those 46 issues, that does include the item on the Division Street retail limits. And I do want to pause for a moment just to provide an update. What we would like to do on that is we are requesting that the amendments for Recap 4 be held in two stages under two separate ordinances. The first ordinance will cover the bulk of the amendments under Recap 4, and the second ordinance will be specific to the amendments for the retail sales and service uses along Division in the Main Street overlay. So as part of that, we've split the presentation into two short segments. The first will be on the bulk of the Recap 4 amendments, and that's what I will go into immediately after this slide. And then what we'd like to have happen is perhaps have testimony taken on any of those issues and then jump back into our presentation on the Division Street limits and then have testimony taken under that. I'd also like to mention for those who have come in that we do have several documents that are available. For those who are interested in all the Recap 4 amendments, there is a sort of a spiral-bound recommended draft over there. We have also created a couple excerpts, one specific to the Division Street regulations and one specific to the regulations involving industrial and employment land. So we do have those over there behind Lindley, the city attorney. Moving forward, although this package does contain a lot of amendments to our land division regulations, in the interest of time, I'm just going to highlight a few of those. Some of the issues that we're addressing are amendments to our alley regulations, which will provide the staff greater discretion to require alleys when they're appropriate and also to clarify the appropriate ownership of the alley. As an aside, the photo here shows a situation which was an unintended consequence where two private alleys got built side by side because of that lack of oversight. So we'd like to try to close that loophole. We are have amendments clarifying when flag lots can be created, and once they are created, we've created some additional regulations that apply to development on the flag lots. We have an amendment to clarify how to measure lot width in single dwelling zones. The intent is to provide a buildable area at the setback line. We are also revising several of the standards that apply to new narrow lots in the single dwelling zones. We're also addressing situations where people are taking advantage of a corner lot provision to either add on to an existing house to build a duplex or adding on for attached houses. We're putting in some regulations to help create compatible design between the two structures. And then finally, the one land division item I'd like to point out is we are amending several of our approval criteria so they better address site layout issues. There are two items in Recap 4 that respond to changes made at the state and regional level. The first I'd like to highlight are amendments to our manufactured home and manufactured dwelling park regulations. These amendments are designed to clarify our current regulations on single manufactured homes as well as groups of manufactured homes, duplexes, and manufactured dwelling parks. Regulations are needed to ensure consistency between state law on these structures and our zoning code. Recap 4 also includes amendments to our regulations for industrial employment uses. This is intended to bring our code into closer compliance with Metro guidelines, which are presented under Title 4, their Urban Growth Management Functional Plan. That title addresses preservation of the industrial land supply. The changes we have would create additional limits on retail and office uses so that their size maximums are similar to Metro's maximums. Additional limits and approval criteria that will apply to land use applications to change comprehensive plan designations. These new criteria will help Metro's regional goals by preserving industrial and employment lands that may have special features. We are adding additional approval criteria to a conditional use review to ensure that these uses will review the effect that they may have on freight traffic in the industrial area. And the last thing I want to highlight is we are creating some additional criteria that apply to land division reviews for industrial areas to ensure that larger shovel-ready sites are not broken up into smaller parcels. That is both sort of a metro and a state goal. There may be some testimony related to the industrial employment regulations and how those regulations affect certain sites in Linton. So I'd like to just take a moment on that. The amendments in Recap 4 are intended to provide a set of regulations citywide that are consistent with current city and metro policy for industrial lands retention. So as a result, the regulations that we're proposing affect all the lands that are shown on the map here, which is a little bit hard to see, but is sort of in the gray and shades of blue. So it is intended to be something that is applicable citywide. When the Linton area... Within the Linton area, the city has an industrial designation and corresponding zoning, and that has been the case for quite a while. During the Linton plan process a couple of years ago, this designation was discussed to a great extent as to whether to change or not. Some of you will recall that the city council made the final decision to keep the industrial designation on this site. But at the same time that that was going on, Metro was expanding their employment maps to create areas of industrial and regionally significant industrial areas. Since staff at the time wasn't sure which way the Linton plan was going to go, they requested that the Linton area not be included in Metro's maps. So as a result, the Metro maps show these areas as employment still, which shows up on the map as sort of a light blue there, although our zoning has it as industrial. At the conclusion of the Linton plan, there was still uncertainty. Let me back up here again. The conclusion of the Linton plan, there was still uncertainty about whether the city would engage in mediation with the neighborhood to find a solution. As a result, we have never actually requested for Metro to change those maps. However, this discrepancy, in essence, still remains between how the city and has the area mapped and how Metro has it designated. Although Recap regulations add some additional requirements citywide to quasi-judicial reviews to remove lands from industrial designations. These changes do not address the map issue. And so we would like to mention that while we do want you to consider what we're doing in Recap 4 because of its citywide implication, and we would like you to move forward with the Planning Commission's recommendation on that. We'd also like to direct, see if there is any interest on council staff for direction on the map issue. There are four options we thought of that could be considered. One is that the council could direct staff to work with Metro to make the Metro's maps consistent with the decision that council made with the Linton plan, which would be to have those maps become industrial at Metro. The council could direct staff to open up the Linton plan back through a new legislative project. Council could also direct staff to readdress Linton issues as part of the river plan, but a word of caution on that. The river plan just went to Planning Commission last night, so that would severely kind of delay that project if that was chosen. And then the last piece is just that the council could acknowledge that there is a discrepancy in these two maps, and it could be up to a future council to determine through some sort of plan whether that gets fixed or not. But I just wanted to put that out there because we felt that the issue at Linton, the root of the problem is not necessarily recap four. Quickly, I want to go over a few other things in the main body of recap four amendments that are affecting certain areas. First off, we are revising the threshold of the size of a property that would trigger an open area requirement in the Gateway Plan District. We are doing a couple amendments that affect radio frequency installations, especially those that are co-located. These are mainly clarifications. They don't actually change policy. We are also revising some of our tree protection fencing requirements. We are making some changes to the boundaries of the Laurelhurst and Eastmoreland plan districts. This is actually to have our maps be in compliance with the original 1937 ordinance that implemented these special setback areas. And lastly, which we will talk about later, there is the revision to the Division Street retail piece. But that is not going to be part of your decision with this part of Recap 4. So Planning Commission on this recommended that you accept the recommendation to approve the ordinance, the code language, and the exhibits. And in addition, that you ask us to monitor any of the results if necessary. That finishes up the presentation on the bulk of Recap 4. We would like to have a couple housekeeping items before we leave. The first that we'd like to mention is, and Carl, I believe, has passed it out, we have created an amended ordinance for this piece. The reason for that is because we were originally on into Recap 4 amending a couple sections of Title 17. We found out that there is a separate project that BES and PDOT is doing that I believe is going to council next week that has a considerable number of amendments to Title 17, and we decided to go ahead and pony onto that project for our couple amendments. So because of that, we did not have to refer to Title 17 in our ordinance anymore. So we amended it to take that out. The second piece we'd like to mention is we are asking that we have a couple amendments to a section of our code. And I can probably do it from memory, but it's the section 33.810, but there was a couple pages of amendments. There is on the first page, there was a typo that was intended to be taken out between the proposed and the recommended draft and was inadvertently left off. I think there were four words that needed to get taken out. And then on the second page, there is a section that is being struck through related to approval criteria for the comprehensive plan map amendments. This approval criteria was specific to jobs capacity for the city of Portland. We were working with Metro sort of offline while this recommended draft was out and got permission from Metro to take those approval criteria out of our code. This was partially because of the fact that we provided Metro with figures that show that we're well on our way to meeting the jobs goals that Metro has for the region, for the city of Portland. And so it was found that we didn't have to have an approval criteria for each separate case-by-case basis. So those are the only changes to the recommended draft. What we'd like you to do is consider those two changes as part of your motion as you move forward. And that's it.
Questions from the commissioners.
And just so that I understand the recommendation on the various options you gave us in terms of the mapping, would that be a motion as well to the ordinance?
No, the decision we're making today is specifically about recap four. The choices about Linton was an informal direction to us about how you would want us to approach it. So it's a separate communication.
So I inferred from your presentation, and tell me if I got this wrong, that the choice that you would make would be to follow up on the Linton plan by requesting Metro to change its maps to industrial to match the city's designation.
That would be the one that's most consistent with your past direction
right.
to us.
Right. Okay. That would be my sense, that we would direct you to do that.
If the council were to adopt the proposed changes today, would this prevent or prohibit any industrial land from being rezoned?
No, you could do it through Gil Kelly, planning director. You could do it through a legislative process. What this prohibits is an individual landowner coming forward and seeking that change through the BDS quasi-judicial.
I can clarify
process.
It does still allow quasi-judicial requests to change designations. This is a little separate from the river plan, which has some more strict requirements that are being considered. But what it does is it creates some additional approval criteria that have to be met that are fairly strict that Metro actually put in their title. So in other words, if somebody was interested in changing from, say, an industrial designation to a commercial designation, there's several new approval criteria, including a size limitation, that they would have to apply and meet for us to grant it. If they weren't able to apply and meet that, then the other opportunity, say if it was a larger site, the other opportunity would be to go through a legislative project.
So let's say that the city and Metro planning documents remain in conflict, and there is a request to rezone industrial land in Portland, which takes precedence?
Well, the only place that we're aware of that where there's a specific conflict, again, is one collection of sites in Linton. So in that case, our zoning ordinance controls the direct development here. All that discrepancy does is says that Metro wouldn't weigh in on that particular decision because they already show that as an employment, not an industrial designation. Whereas in anywhere else, if our maps are in agreement, they would also have the opportunity if right. they felt that our decision was running afoul of regional policy.
Just so I make sure I understand this, these changes would create additional burdens on any applicant who wants to rezone industrial land, not just Linton, but anyone who seeks a rezoning. So the playing field is level for going into the future.
Yeah.
Right. And basically it was something that Metro wanted to put these burdens on the applicant because Metro basically said, we'll create a policy where you don't have to notify us in advance or work directly with Metro. We'll create sort of this policy where you can take smaller parcels that maybe are inconsequential if they meet all these requirements, and we won't care that you're maybe changing the map on that from industrial to employment or to commercial. But basically, they do apply citywide.
Thank you.
What is the latest on the Linton parcels of land? When we made that decision 2 years ago, there was an understanding that both the community of Linton and the what's the other group, the waterfront,
the working waterfront,
would get together and determine an appropriate industrial use for that property. Has that ever occurred?
Well, there were some initial conversations. I don't know if those were ever concluded, and I haven't checked in recently, but I'm aware from conversations with PDC that at least one of the principal property owners there has been in discussions with potential users. I don't think any agreement or deals ever been arrived at.
The other thing, that just to refresh my mind, Gil, the different types of industrial use. I think Metro had the Linton property a different designation than other industrial areas. What was that? What are those two different industrial?
From the Metro point of view, they designated what they called regionally significant industrial areas, and then left as a second category those that would be industrial but didn't rise to the level of regional significance. So left that discretion about those lands to local jurisdictions. And at our suggestion, they left the Linton piece out because we were just then beginning the Linton plan process, and we didn't want to predetermine the outcome of that by suggesting that Metro designated as regionally significant land. So that was the reason for that designation by Metro in this instance. But regionally significant industrial lands do carry the extra burdens that Phil was just mentioning with them. That is to say, they are of such significance to the region that the burden should be very high for converting them to non-industrial uses.
You know, I think it was a very difficult decision that we made about that. And my very sincere hope was that something would be done to develop that land. And I'm disappointed that 2 years later we're still, it's still in the discussion stage.
I know some of the issues relative to that land are Superfund issues that are in the river. And as we have had discussions at the Time Oil site and other sites, you get certain industrial users that are interested in riverfront property, and then the first thing they hear about are the issues relative to rehabbing land. Well, rehabbing the land is really actually the smallest part. It's the future unknown liability if future contamination occurs, and people that buy it don't want to have that associated with them, but no, there is no mechanism by which we indemnify them from any future liability, even if it's discovered and not even necessarily thought to be their fault. So we've wrestled with that, I know, at Terminal 4, mm-hmm. I believe, and at this site as well, trying to figure out how we can, if not clean the site, at least indemnify potential buyers that they're held harmless to any contaminants found on the site.
Well, it seemed like we also put the community of Linton in sort of a difficult position. I would never want it to be residential, I don't think.
Yeah.
But is there some other designation that perhaps commercial or something that could be used to begin to bring some life back to that area?
Well, the problem you have, to revisit that for a moment, is you have, from a fire safety point of view, you have a very active railroad that not just has railroad cars coming and going, but often coming and stopping. So that you had one egress, if you recall, coming from that property. So if you have people on the other side of the railroad tracks, and one side's the river and the two other sides are oil tank farms, and the exit is blocked by a railroad, what the Fire Bureau said was they would need to have a bridge built over that railroad in order to assure them that you could have commercial or residential uses down there, which is why it's been restricted to industrial up to this point.
I thought there was a second egress.
No, not that gets you, that I'm aware of, not the one that gets you out of there without crossing the river.
I mean, you have...
Well, yes.
That, I mean, you have oil tank farms on both sides, the river on the east side, I guess it would be, and then the west side is the railroad track.
Well, I think there's two ways of... getting to the other side of the railroad tracks, but they both go by.
There's not an egress that doesn't have to cross the railroad, is what I was trying to say.
But Gil, the mayor raises an interesting point. Have the Linton people submitted written testimony on this particular code change? Okay.
Yeah.
But the point, has that been circulated to...
It's over there. I don't think you've seen it yet. It's okay. Very narrowly focused.
We'll have a chance to look at that. Yeah. But it feels like a catch-22.
Yeah.
You know, we're in the abstract, we want to maintain industrial land, we all get it, but this may also be industrial land that never gets developed for any purpose for a bunch of reasons. So I'm just curious, how do we balance the desire to maintain an inventory of industrial land and at the same time help a neighborhood like Linton, right, which clearly wants to be part of the solution to develop this land in a responsible way, against the broader challenge that it just may sit fallow for forever?
Well, the council debated this issue extensively, as did the Planning Commission a couple of years ago, and arrived at the decision after considering those issues, so I don't want to offer a new opinion about that. But I would say that after the council meeting, Mayor Potter did convene a process by which there was discussion about action steps that could be taken. And that resulted in a list that was then assigned to different bureaus, and PDC was the one with the liaison to the property owners to try to get industrial development to occur there. And I can ask that they furnish you with an update on that. There clearly were feelings on their part that there was some optimism about prospects for industrial reuse of the property. There are challenges, as Commissioner Leonard mentioned, about any brownfield site in the city, and particularly those to be reused for industrial purposes. So I think we'd want to give you a better briefing than I can give you today on what that process that PDC has been engaged in has looked like. But if I think if you want to consider non-industrial uses on the site, that's a broader conversation that would essentially.
I guess what I don't want to. There was a full record on that a couple of years ago, and there's a lot on our plate today. I guess the concern that I have is that we want to see something happen there, and maybe at some point it becomes an arts mecca, a place where sculpture and other things are fabricated, consistent with the old steel mill there, or perhaps someone has some idea for whatever. But it seems to me that when you have this catch 22, you know, the question is, what role can the city play to aggressively seek some use that that the community can embrace?
Well, when many of those uses you just mentioned would be allowed under the industrial zoning, so residential would be permitted and retail would be prohibited, and so would any significant amount of retail. But there's a fairly broad range of industrial and fabrication uses along the lines you discussed that could be allowed.
And that is a place where the river plan may be able to help you, because there is some action items proposed as part of that plan to work on that specific issue of how can we find some more suitable industrial uses for that site.
Well, I just think we owe it to the Linton community to try to figure out how to use that land, and rather than just, you know, just be satisfied with a particular designation, and make sure that there's some work done to try to assist them. I know they weren't happy, and my sense was that there was going to be some action, and I just have not seen that action.
And not to to diminish the importance of that, but I probably think it's important to revisit the angst of the issue at the time. And I certainly want to see the site develop to its highest and best use, but with the understanding that there are significant safety issues for human beings that would live or spend any amount of time on that site. If ever there was an accident at the oil tank farm and you had a convergence of a train going by at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's hard to explain to people and neighbors about those potential hazards when they have a vision of something that they see as a very great amenity in their neighborhood, like a park or housing and whatnot. But there's a side of me that has to say, it is not appropriate to have people sleep there or do retail there, because what we should never be is in the place of ever having to say, how could you have allowed that development to occur there? And it's very, as much as I want to accommodate the neighbors, I also don't ever want to have to explain how I got myself to the place where I allowed a development to happen there when my background tells me better.
But there would, regardless of the designation, people could work at that site.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So what is the difference between, say, an industrial worker versus a retail shop?
That's an excellent question, and the difference is safety training. They actually are required as part of the workers' comp laws and various OSHA laws to be trained specific to the place that they work at. So police officers have certain requirements, firefighters, other industrial workers have others. And with those specific hazards there, they have to have certain training and breathing equipment, exiting strategies, the kinds of things you would never ask of the public that was shopping or going to a movie or living in a house. Mm-hmm. And so that what you have is an orderly exiting of people in a very systematic way in industrial use that you would never have if you had a commercial use, which would be more characterized by chaos and who knows what else.
One thing I could offer, Mayor, is I'd be happy to furnish you and the council a memo out, sort of apprising you of the status of that action list that we came to after your decision, and I'll ask for cooperation from PDC, and Parks had one item on there as well, and so did transportation, so we'll get that to you guys so you have a sense of that. And as Eric mentioned, there are a few things where we've been working with the Linton community inside the river plan within the framework of the discussion you made in terms of improving waterfront access and so forth, which is a big issue for them, and potentially some upgrades to the commercial area along Highway 30. So,
good. Thank you.
Which, you know, I don't want to keep going on, but which isn't to say we couldn't do those kinds of things. We were given some ways to make that happen, a bridge. You know, if you had a bridge mm-hmm. so that you wouldn't get trapped and certain other things happen, you could change it to a mixed-use piece of property, but we would want to be clear if we ever decided to do something like that, that those were conditions of approval for whatever went in there.
You know, and Commissioner Leonard, you make great points, and I guess what I think about is we've just gone through a Cully Concordia plan, and we've engaged a whole neighborhood in a vision for what it could look like, and we've made some commitments to infrastructure and parks and things, and we've tapped their creative genius, and we're doing that throughout the city. And Linton has for a long time wanted to be proactive to make the best use of this site, and I understand the arguments that you make against certain kinds of uses. I think if we, through the next phase of planning, can be proactive and help them find some way to break this deadlock, because it does seem like a catch-22, and find something that's compatible, that brings some vitality and some jobs to that area. You know, we don't have a lot of examples throughout the city of communities around industrial areas that are this proactive about wanting to be part of a solution.
And you don't. And it's why we're having the discussion, you know, and I don't want to feel like I'm a wet blanket on the discussion as well, but you know, you do have the safety concerns, and then you do have the issue of how much industrial land do we have, because that is a potential job base. And the issue there isn't not finding somebody who's interested in the site, it's addressing the Superfund issues. And if we could figure out a way between our attorneys and the EPA attorneys to indemnify a potential purchaser of the property, that is what I understand has been the limitation of allowing the property to sell to somebody who would use it as industrial and create jobs. So I guess even if we'd addressed the safety issues, I'd have a concern about just reducing our stock of industrial land in the city. I mean, it does create a job base.
Okay. Now we'll let you guys do some talking. How many folks do we have signed up to testify?
For the first item, we have 5 people signed up.
Okay. Please call those 5 names.
We have Tamara DeRitter, Ted Gilbert, and Thomas Dolan. Come on up. They'll be followed by Edward Jones and Dorothy Cofield.
Thanks for being here, folks. When you speak, state your name for the record. You each have 3 minutes, and anyone can begin.
Hi, I'm Tamara DeRitter. I live at 1707 Northeast 52nd Avenue. I serve on the Rose City Park Neighborhood Association Board, as well as co-chair for the Land Use Committee for Rose City Park. I'm also a self-employed land use planner as TDR and Associates, and live in the Rose City Park neighborhood. A couple things that I would like to point out, the discussion about railroad, I would only encourage you in this open time of dealing with a new administration coming into our Washington offices to look at a better embracement of with the rail system itself, because everything, including the Cully bike pedestrian trail, is hampered by our negotiation and coordination with the rail administration, which acts as its own fiefdom. So I would love to have a better coordination between the cities and the railways for access. As a CD director for the city of Fairview, we had terrible trouble having coordination with the railways as well. And access for Linton is it's hampered by the railway system. So I really encourage a broader look and maybe even a statewide look at reclaiming some of the railway access way and coordination, especially in the urban areas. Number two, I have a number of edits I'd like to promote in the proposed changes. I don't know if you want me to go through the document right now or hand them in. Basically, just
Mayor, can I make a suggestion on that?
Yes.
Since we have council, we have planning staff here, perhaps she could review the edits with council staff and we could see whether it's a friendly amendment rather than go through it with us since they're here.
You have just a little over a minute left. I doubt you'd be able to get to.
Right. The only one that I had a negative reaction to was actually one dealing with manufactured home parks in removing the required open space for parks that contained residents that were older than 14 years old. How are we going to regulate that as land use planners? How? I mean, it's not a senior facility. We're talking about manufactured home parks that do not contain 14-year-olds or younger. Who doesn't go visit their grandmother? Who doesn't need a place to play? And what I'm saying is we need to maintain those open spaces in the manufactured home parks and not delete that section.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
If you'd like, you could give your recommendations to the Planning Bureau.
I will. Thank you.
My name is Ted Gilbert, and I will be brief. I'm here simply to say thank you. First of all, thank you to you, because it was you some months ago that instructed the Bureau of Planning to carry the issue on the Gateway Regional Center forward and get it resolved with Recap 4. Thank you, secondly, to the Bureau of Planning, Barry Manning and his colleagues, who work with us over an extended period of months to come up with some middle ground that hopefully is going to resolve this issue. This one item will not single-handedly kickstart the Gateway Regional Center, but it's a tool, and this, along with a combination of tools, some of which we hope to be in front of you for discussion soon, will hopefully provide the much-needed stimulus for Gateway and East Portland. Thanks.
Well, since you're thanking us, Ted, can we thank you for one thing, which is I believe you're the board chair of HOST, Home Ownership,
One Street at a Time.
And we took up the Cully Concordia plan recently, and you are developing affordable homes in the heart of Cully, which at least the people that I work with as the housing commissioner for the city think are some of the most attractive homes within the price point that you deliver, which is about $180,000 to $200,000 for a three-bedroom house. So we want to thank you for helping us to address this problem in our community through your volunteer community service.
Thank you, Commissioner. I'll extend that to the staff and the other volunteers of HOST. We really appreciate that.
I can't let Commissioner Fish outdo me. Thank you for your support of the Portland Marathon and your involvement. It brings a lot of money into this community. It's a great program, and I've watched you out there in the very early morning hours, freezing cold, doing your job, and thank you for that.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor.
Commissioner Leonard has an issue he wants to bring up with you. So I think now we're gonna cut off this questioning. We're gonna move forward before we get some balance here. Yeah, before the attack comes.
Please.
Yeah, my name is Tom Dolan. I live at 4932 Southeast Taylor Street, and I'm on the Land Use Committee of Mount Tabor Neighborhood Association. And our focus is very narrow in relation to this this big document, and that is the width of building lots. And we support BDS's suggestion that they be set at fixed 36 feet rather than the current code, which allows the lot width to be any width as long as the front setback is 36 feet. And what we've seen in our neighborhood is that results in some very convoluted boundaries of newly created lots. one that we've dealt with recently. The lot has 10 different boundary lines and surrounds over half of an existing house. And we think that that sort of configuration is going to lead to a lot of conflicts in the future. And it's a terrible legacy to leave to future residents of Portland, where if it continues, what we'd see is a mismatch of illogical boundary lines. We're really pleased that under the new suggested changes that this would be taken care of.
As land use planner for that team, let me just state I second that emotion. There is it's a C-shaped lot, and the reason they made the C-shaped lot is so they can gather the 3,000 square feet needed for the minimum lot size.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.
Next three are Edward Jones, Dorothy Cofield, and Phil Grillo.
How many people for the first one total?
That's all who signed up, these last three.
Thanks for being here, folks. State your name when you speak. You each have 3 minutes. Anyone can begin.
Dorothy Cofield. My address is 9755 Southwest Barnes Road, Suite 450, Portland, Oregon. And I'm a land use attorney. And I really just wanted a clarification, and it's a follow-up to the last comment about the minimum width size of 36 feet. And this is on page 13 of the proposed amendments, and it has to do with when primary structures are allowed. And I just wanted some clarification under 33110.212C3. It says lots or combinations of lots in the RF through the R7 must be at least 36 feet wide and then be 40 feet deep or whatever the dimensional requirement is, or not have abutted any lot since 1979. So if I read that correctly, and I just want a clarification from staff, is the intent if you have ownership of lots, two lots, you're aggregating them, you're combining them if they don't meet that minimum width. But if you have a singleton lot in single ownership since 1979, you will be able to develop, notwithstanding that you're less than 36 feet wide.
Okay, we'll have the staff come in at the end of the testimony and respond to your question.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Afternoon. I'm Ed Jones. I'm the land use chair for the Linton Neighborhood Association. Back in 2005, Phil Grillo and I sat in front of three of you and went through the discussions that the mayor referred to earlier. And I don't want to revisit all that except to say that in the course of the mediation that we did have, some progress was made. I am not disappointed in that, particularly given how far apart everybody was to start. And most of the agreement that was reached is reflected in the current draft of the North Reach Plan. So some progress was made, and you will see when the North Reach Plan gets to you where those agreements came up. What I'm here today to talk about is an extremely narrow point about item 15, and there was some reference made to it already. It purports to be simply a duplication in the city code of the requirements that Metro has set down for comprehensive plan changes. It's our opinion that it's not the same and that the changes are much to the disadvantage of the Linton community. And there's a document, I don't know if you have it in front of you, but it sets out and compares the equivalent Metro code sections with the proposed new city code sections. And as you will see, the differences are significant in terms of what's going on in Linton. Now, it may be that because of the North Reach plan and so on and so forth, that bluntly, none of this matters. But at the moment, it does matter, and we're concerned about it. If you look at the second of the two examples, the Metro Code talks about access to specialized services, redundant electrical power, industrial gases. The city's version of that all of a sudden includes industrial pipelines. we feel like there's a big target on the back of the Linton neighborhood when we see that pipeline language in there. There's not a lot of pipelines running around this town. So we have some genuine concerns that the city amendments are much more restrictive than the metro requirements that they nominally track. And what we'd like to do is have the council send item 15 back to the Planning Commission for working through in the Portland plan. And when you had the four examples that planning offered you about how to reconcile the differences between metro and the city plan in Linton, one option they didn't give you was bump that process into the Portland plan. That's the process we favor because it will allow a full-scale look at all the issues rather than a subsection-by-subsection struggle. So that's our proposal, is that we have not approve Article Item 15 now. It's much more controversial, not appropriately a recap matter. Send it back to commission, have it come out in the Portland plan, and if I'm given a moment or two, I can update you on some of the issues on Linton, but I realize you've already spent more time talking about them than you probably anticipated spending, so I'll wait for your direction on that.
Well, Judge Jones, I have a question for you. Could you bring us up to date on what's going on in Linton?
Well, actually, there are currently some serious negotiations between BP, the tank farm to the south, and the mill owners. As I understand it, and this is all perhaps Phil knows more or some than I do, BP is interested in expanding into the south end of that property, and I suspect would buy just the south end of it if they could convince the mill owners to sell it. The mill owners, of course, want out. BP apparently is going to buy the whole site. That leaves it up in the air what's going to happen on the north end. And in my view, if its neighborhood hasn't voted on this, I think it's a positive step in the sense that it will provide more opportunities for planning and actions on the north end, which is the part of the site that is of the greatest concern because it's at what we might call the core of the Linton community. So I'm actually kind of hopeful, although after all these years it sounds almost strange to say it, that progress is being made, not as fast as anybody might have hoped, but things are going on.
And I can just make sure I understand what you're asking us to consider. Option number one is we could vote on this package, including item 15, up or down. Option two is you've identified your handout suggests that there's some variance between Metro Code and the proposed city code.
So and there's no, yeah, that's obvious. Now, how significant those variances are is where the differences
We get to ask staff
right.
when they come
My
back
recommendation is that you, I don't care about the rest of Recap 4. Vote it in, but pull 15 out, send it back, have that unfold in the context of the Portland plan, I think is the wisest approach.
But this moves to a second reading next week.
Okay.
So we could ask planning to take a look at that and come back with some.
But then I have to ask a question. I mean, understanding that that a gas pipeline does go through this property.
Well, it doesn't. That goes nearby.
Well,
when
they blow up, it doesn't matter if they're.
Well, if they blow up, my house is gone too. So I'm with you.
Maybe not, but certainly a house in this property would be. Why is it inappropriate to have a gas pipeline?
Oh, I'm not saying it's inappropriate. I'm just saying what happens here is what becomes what is restrictive under Metro becomes prohibitive under the city version.
Prohibitive in terms of allowing other uses?
Well, against any quasi-judicial change. Now, I'm not saying that you would be approving any quasi-judicial changes. I'm just saying that Metro's rule says it's really hard. The Portland version of the rule makes it impossible.
And I understand you're simply asking us to consider whether there's a way of harmonizing those two, or your preference is to punt altogether.
Well, if we were talking about my preferences, we'd be having a completely different discussion.
But you've asked us to at least consider harmonizing or at least asking staff why there's an apparent variance.
Right. So, I'm not happy with the metro proposals, but I'm happier with them than I are with the city's nominally equivalent text.
And just so I'm clear, Judge Jones, to the end that someday you could argue that some mixed use could occur down on that site. You want to have the possibility.
Well, we don't know what the possibilities are. Until somebody comes along with a plan and some cash, it's hard to say what might happen on that site.
You just don't want to preclude that from happening.
I'm trying to keep the door open.
What if I told you I'd like to preclude that possibility?
It wouldn't surprise me.
Judge, do you prefer sitting up at the bench? And do you prefer being in Commissioner Leonard's seat or your seat?
No. As I miss this part of this. I don't get to be an advocate in my current job.
Thank you.
You know, you did mention that it would open up the entire Linton plan by sending 15 back.
No. Sending 15 back does not open up. In another context, I'm going to suggest to you that it would be wise for this council to say to the Bureau, use the Portland plan as a vehicle for taking another look at the Linton waterfront, even within the restrictions that Commissioner Leonard would like to have on it. A fresh look is needed. There has been some movement in the parties, and I think there's some things could be worked out. There are kinds of industrial uses that the Linton neighborhood could live with,
For an example.
Well, frankly, tank farms are, you know, when you're looking for industrial neighbors, tank farms are better than most. They're kind of quiet.
Because they're quiet.
And now they could use a paint job.
They're usually quiet. They can be very loud at times.
Well, you know, they're there, and frankly, they're already much closer to us than they would be to anybody on the riverfront. So we're already taking our life in our hands in Linton, but we're brave.
But, I mean, just to make the point, and because you're here, I get to ask you this. You knew that when you moved in there.
Would anybody who moved onto the waterfront.
Well, but I think people presume things are safe, and they presume that it's all been thought out, and they presume a lot of things when they're not experts in the field. When we were having this debate before, I was wrestling with this issue.
Let me just say, Commissioner Leonard, that I'm confident that all the safety issues can be worked out to your satisfaction and the city's satisfaction.
I think we got a slug of people to testify.
Yeah, okay.
Like this guy.
Thank you, Mayor Potter and Commissioners. Phil Grillo, for the record, 111 Southwest 5th. As Judge Jones pointed out, I've also been involved in these discussions in the Linton matter for a number of years now, certainly not as long as many of the Linton residents have been, but I represent three of the nearby energy companies, Kinder Morgan, BP, and NuStar, as well as the pipeline company. They're the Olympic Pipeline Company. And as you may know, there is a terminus of the Olympic Pipeline, both at Linton and then further down in Wilbridge. I've also been involved with the Working Waterfront Coalition, was part of some of the effort that the mayor and the city made in terms of the mediation session after the Linton decision. And I would also point out that there was a prior mediation session that happened before that that actually the Working Waterfront financed. So we have really tried to work from the outset here in a collaborative way. And I do agree with Judge Jones that I do think since all of this has happened, there has, I think, been much more understanding in both directions. And I think because of that, it's important to keep going in that direction as much as we can. With regard to recap, I'm here generally to support the provisions in recap that have been moving forward with regard to industrial lands. This is the first time that I heard just a few moments ago about the potential mapping situation. I haven't had a chance really to review Judge Jones's comments, so I'd like an opportunity to do that and get back to you. But Generally, what I understand to be the situation with RECAP 4 and why it's in RECAP as opposed to doing some other sort of policy work on this is that it basically is moving forward to implement, with regard to industrial lands, the metro policies. So I believe that if there was going to be a zone change that occurred down in that area, in addition to the city's regulations, you would have to directly show that you could implement Title IV in addition to the other provisions at Metro. So I don't think this, from a text standpoint, really adds anything, although I agree that the language is not exactly the same. With that, let me just say that it is very important to keep the land there zoned industrial, and the potential transaction that's going on now is very much tied to keeping that heavy industrial land. And I think one of the things that we learned, I think, through a lot of our discussions is that in order for something to happen down there, you've got to have the property owner at the table. This gives the opportunity to deal with this stuff with the property owner at the table. And unless and until that property, and I mean the 25-acre Linton plywood site, sells, we really don't have ostensibly a property owner at the table. And as you know, we really didn't have that in any of the discussions earlier. And it's very difficult to have that discussion without the property owner there. One last point to consider is there are actually three properties down there. There's the 25-acre site, which is the Linton plywood site that's potentially going to be sold now. And then there's the two other properties, the Harmer Steel property and the RK Storage, both approximately 5 acres. Those are active, heavy industrial pieces of property with steel over most of the entire space there. So you have two very active heavy industrial operations on the 2 5-acre pieces, and then you have essentially a brownfield site that needs an owner, and we are hopefully close to having that. So it's very important to keep the steady state of the zoning and to make sure that we view that as prime industrial land going into the future. So I want to answer any questions you have on that.
That's a good explanation. Thank you. Thanks, folks.
Thank you.
That was for the first one?
Yes.
And how many folks are signed up for the second?
17.
Let's have staff come back and respond to the issues that were presented.
I took a few notes. I'll try and go through the items I heard, and you can tell me if I've missed something. There was some testimony about the manufactured home park and the issue of open space there, and that change is being made, as Phil described, to bring our code in conformance with state law. The law in that case doesn't permit the city to be more restrictive than the state law, and so having a standard, as we do currently in the code, that requires more open space than state law is construed as being more restrictive than that. So we believe we're required to make that change. Dorothy Cofield asked a question about Section 110.212(c)(3), I think, which is the standards that have to do with whether a lot is buildable under the base zone. And the reason that relates to the lot width measurement issue is that one of the standards is that a lot has to be a certain width to be buildable. And I think, to make it short, I think the answer to her question is yes, there is. If the ownership has been separate since 79, you can still build there despite it being narrower than 36 feet. And that's one of the reasons why we have the Living Smart housing designs and some other design standards that apply in this situation. With regard to the Linton testimony, there's a couple things just to be aware of. Right now we're operating under an extension granted by Metro because we're already past the compliance deadline for bringing our code into conformance with Metro's Title IV. So one consequence of not addressing this issue tonight would be that we would have to renegotiate that extension. The other consequence, which I think Mr. Grillo may have alluded to, is that Metro code until we adopt our own code that implements it, we're required to directly apply Metro's policies anyway. So if you fail to adopt the proposed code, the Bureau of Development Services would have to continue to apply the policy to cases that came forward in the interim because we haven't made our code into conformance with Metro Title IV. Some mention was made of some of the language differences between what we're proposing in the Metro title. Some of that is because we have to use different terminology to be in sync with our own code definitions. So some of that is by necessity just to make the language